Here we are back together with our evening under lamplight on Cambridge 105 Community Radio in your city with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson. You are invited, as always, to attend and to respond to us at rla@momentsunderlamplight.com. As you know, this third series of Evening Under Lamplight has taken upon itself the task, the delight, the burden of working our way through Walt Whitman's long and important and exciting poem, Song of Myself. We're almost halfway through the poem, this week looking at chant 24 out of 52. I know that some listeners are not too interested in this part of the hour, but there are certainly others who are enjoying our leisurely time with this poem, which has so many gems to reveal to us if we give it time. And there's no need to get the poem or understand it. We just want to attend and let it catch us. Maybe just one or two lines or images at a time, but that's certainly enough. This evening, under lamplight, we have a long selection to look at, and we might have to dedicate the whole show to visiting this section, walking around it, chewing it over, or whatever metaphor we want for our slow reading and reflection. And we'll be breaking things up with an interesting selection of music. Are you with me on this? Come on, you know I'll make it as exciting as possible. Oh, and something else I ought to tell you, or warn you, this evening's reading is notorious for all its sexual imagery, suggestive rather than explicit, including the exciting new word, omnipotent. Stay tuned and find out what this means. I'm aware that it's hard to follow this discussion without seeing the text. There's nothing to stop you arming yourself with a text, either a book or some online text of Song of Myself. But it's no bad thing just to listen. It's a good exercise in your auditory imagination. So let's start, as we usually do, with a reading of this week's selection. But first, let's have some music to lead us in. How about the Mike Scott and the Waterboys and Open, the kind of heartfelt connection to everything all around that can lead us into Whitman's extravaganza.
Open to service. Open open to saying yes. Open to risk. Open to passion. To peace and silence too. Open to love. Open to beauty. Open, beloved, to you. Open, beloved, to you. Thank you.
Walt Whitman, an American, one of the roughs, a cosmos. Disorderly, fleshly and sensual, eating and drinking and breeding. No sentimentalist, no stander above men or apart from them. No more modest than immodest. Unscrew the locks from the doors. Unscrew the doors themselves from their jams. Whoever degrades another degrades me. And whatever is done or said returns at last to me. And whatever I do or say, I also return. Through me, the afflatus surging and surging. Through me, the current and index. I speak the password primeval. I give the sign of democracy. By God, I will accept nothing which all cannot have their counterpart of on the same terms. Through me, many long, dumb voices. Voices of the interminable generations of slaves. Voices of prostitutes and of deformed persons. Voices of the diseased and despairing, and of thieves and dwarfs. Voices of cycles of preparation and accretion, and of the threads that connect the stars, and of wombs, and of the father stuff, and of the rights of them the others are down upon, of the trivial and flat and foolish and despised, of fog in the air and beetles rolling balls of dung. Through me, forbidden voices, voices of sexes and lusts, voices veiled, and I remove the veil, voices indecent, by me clarified and transfigured. I do not press my finger across my mouth. I keep as delicate around the bowels as around the head and heart. Copulation is no more rank to me than death is. I believe in the flesh and the appetites. Seeing, hearing, and feeling are miracles, and each part and tag of me is a miracle. Divine am I inside and out, and I make holy whatever I touch or am touched from. The scent of these armpits is aroma finer than prayer. This head is more than churches or Bibles or creeds. If I worship any particular thing, it shall be some spread of my body. Translucent mold of me, it shall be you. Shaded ledges and rests, firm masculine coulter, it shall be you. Whatever goes to the tilth of me, it shall be you. You, my rich blood, your milky stream, pale strippings of my life. Breast that presses against other breasts, it shall be you. My brain, it shall be your occult convolutions. Root of washed sweet flag, timorous pond snipe, nest of guarded duplicate eggs, it shall be you. Mixed tussled hay of head and beard and brawn, it shall be you. trickling sap of maple, fiber of manly wheat, it shall be you. Sun, so generous, it shall be you. Vapors lighting and shading my face, it shall be you. You sweaty brooks and dews, it shall be you. Winds whose soft tickling genitals rub against me, it shall be you. Broad, muscular fields, branches of live oak, loving lounger in my winding paths, it shall be you. Hands I have taken, face I have kissed, mortal I have ever touched, it shall be you. I dote on myself. There is that lot of me, and all so luscious. Each moment, and whatever happens, thrills me with joy. I cannot tell how my ankles bend, nor whence the cause of my faintest wish, nor the cause of the friendship I emit, nor the cause of the friendship I take again. To walk up my stoop is unaccountable. I pause to consider if it really be. That I eat and drink is spectacle enough for the great authors and schools. A morning glory at my window satisfies me more than the metaphysics of books. To behold the daybreak, the little light fades, the immense and diaphanous shadows. The air tastes good to my palate. Hefts of the moving world at innocent gambols, silently rising, freshly exuding, scooting obliquely high and low. Something I cannot see pulls upward libidinous prongs. Seas of bright juice suffuse heaven. The earth by the sky stayed with, the daily close of their junction, the heaved challenge from the east that moment over my head, the mocking taunt, see then whether you shall be master. Reading of Whitman's 24th chant from Song of Myself was punctuated by the Johannes Damascenus Choir of Essen, bringing us a hymn from the Palm Sunday Russian Orthodox liturgy. I don't know what the words say on this track, but the sound is quite appropriate to what Whitman has been describing. The humble reverence for the beautiful, creative, not to say provocative workings of the world. But now it's time for us to play around with what Whitman is saying in these lines. Walt Whitman, an American, one of the roughs, a cosmos, he begins. This is, in fact, the first time an early reader of the poem would find out who the author was. The first edition in 1855 had no name on the cover or the title page. There was the portrait of Whitman before the title page, in slouched hat, open collar, the relaxed pose of some sort of worker or lounger, someone quite outside social respectability. One of the roughs, in fact. But it's not until this line, line 499 in the poem, that Whitman's name actually appears in the book. In later editions, which contained Whitman's name, now somewhat famous or notorious, on the cover and title page, Whitman changed this line and was no longer an American, but Walt Whitman, a cosmos of Manhattan, the sun. What happened to his identification with all sorts of Americans across the broad stretch of the land? Why identify himself now as just a New Yorker? Of Manhattan, the sun. And what happened to those roughs? By the way, what exactly is a rough? It's a disorderly or rowdy guy. The word comes from ruffian, the disorderly person Whitman is identifying himself with, the kind of person the police want to clear off the streets, who disrupt the calm life. And this is juxtaposed to a cosmos. Cosmos means the harmonious, orderly universe, contrasted with its opposite, chaos. So there are the two extremes. As we've seen before, Whitman opens his arms as wide as he can to grasp two extremes and then embrace them together. Then we get a double set of three words describing what a rough is like. Disorderly, fleshly, and sensual. One, two, three. And eating, drinking, and breeding, 4, 5, 6. He says he's no sentimentalist. The sentimentalist would be a nice person with nice feelings and a warm heart, but someone standing apart from the situation, having no real connection with real things. But Whitman declares that he's no stander above men and women or apart from them. A typical sentimentalist of this sort might be Mrs. Jellyby in Dickens' Bleak House, a telescopic philanthropist who works tirelessly to sponsor missionary work to people in remote Africa, while at the same time her own children run around untended, falling down the stairs, going hungry because no one's seen to a meal, resentful because so neglected. Mrs. Jellyby sentimentally justifies her work to herself because it seems to show she has a good heart. But she actually brings ruin to those closest to her, her family. Whitman wants none of this. If he got involved in philanthropic projects, it would not be with some remote people he had no contact with, but with those near him, or those he could go visit and commune with. Not a telescopic philanthropist, but a microscopic philanthropist. And finally, he announces that he is no more modest than immodest. Of course not. This poem is one big brag, isn't it? Modesty covers itself. Immodesty reveals itself. Unashamed, exposed, vulnerable. And as if we don't believe him, he calls out to us, to someone else, "Unscrew the locks from the doors. Unscrew the doors themselves from their jams." In a very American gesture of putting the highest ideals next to the most mundane details, we see here the cosmos descending to the ordinary world of the carpenter, called in to work on the doors. "Listen, buddy, we need you to unscrew the lock here. Now, on second thoughts, why not take off the whole door while you're at it?" So Whitman, no more modest than immodest, calls for all doors to be unlocked. No, that's not it. He goes further than that. The locks have to come off the doors. No, that's not good enough for him either. Let's take the doors off the jams altogether. There are no halfways with Whitman. he has to go all the way. As William Blake, another one of the roughs, sort of, put it, enough or too much. Removing the doors is a rich image of embracing all humanity. We often speak of closing doors to describe the way people turn away from other people. Don't talk to me about him. I've closed the door on him. We also speak of the way people keep their innermost thoughts and feelings locked away inside. With no more locks and no more doors, there's nothing to hide us from other people and nothing to keep us from embracing other people. If we had any modesty before, we have to abandon it now. There are no more doors to hide behind. Doors, of course, are also a sign of artificial division. But how can there be any artificial divisions between Whitman and other people when, as he tells us in the next lines, whoever degrades another degrades me, and whatever is done or said returns at last to me? He is identified with the other person. There are no divisions. There can be no doors. Whitman makes himself the center to which all tends and returns. Whatever is done or said returns at last to me. Like a spider sitting in the midst of a vast web, sensitive to any movement anywhere on the web. But the point is, we are all centers like this, you and me. This reminds me of a wonderful piece of graffiti a few years ago in my village of Linton. There was a boy, still in school, I'll keep his name out of it, who used to go around drawing clever things on the pavement, sometimes with very clever words. His best work was a circle right in the middle of a path, in which he'd written, "Exact center of the universe," with a large X. So this was the exact center of the universe? Yes, of course it was. If the universe is infinite, then any point has a claim to being the center. Two steps down the path, of course, was another center, and two steps to the left, and so on. Every spot, every moment in time, returns at last to me, across the universe.
Like endless rain into a paper cup, they slither wildly as they slip away across the universe. Pools of sorrow, waves of joy are drifting through my opened mind, possessing and caressing me. Before me like a million eyes, they call me on and on across the universe. Thoughts meander like a restless wind inside a letterbox. They tumble blindly as they make their way across the universe. Across the universe. Jackaroo Dave.
That was the version of John Lennon's Across the Universe, not schmaltzed up by Phil Spector, from the album Let It Be... Naked. Jai Guru Deva Om, John chants. Glory to the divine guru. Is that Guru Whitman? At least during our evening under lamplight, here on Cambridge 105, us together, you and me, Robert Louis Abrahamson. But the door imagery takes on additional meaning a few lines further on. Doors are not only divisions, blocking off one room from another, but passages through which we can move from one place to another. And Whitman sets himself up as a door through which a whole catalogue of things pass through. First, there is the afflatus, or divine breath of inspiration, coming through me, so that he is enabled to speak the password primeval, the first word that created everything, the divine logos, in fact. God was about to create the world, but was first asked for his password, the first primeval password ever uttered. Then, through me, comes a succession of voices. This, according to Whitman, is the poet's true role, being the vehicle for the voices of the world. This, too, perhaps, is the role of the radio, isn't it? So I, too, am a doorway, and through me come to you these voices of Walt Whitman and the Waterboys and the Russian Liturgy and John Lennon. Whitman opens himself to the many long, dumb voices. The voices of the dispossessed and outcasts, the roughs, in other words, the interminable generations of slaves, the prostitutes and deformed persons, the diseased and despairing, and thieves and dwarves, and the voices forbidden in polite talk in Whitman's time, those voices talking about sex, the cycles of preparation and accretion, the work of preparing for new birth and then the new birth itself, the accretion. The threads that connect the stars, and this means wombs and father stuff, a word Whitman seems to have invented. I see from an internet search that father stuff has come to be used for stuff that interests fathers, like fancy lawn mowers or workbenches or new waxes to polish the car, father stuff as opposed to kid stuff. But that's not quite what Whitman means. Father stuff is the semen, that stuff that is the father's part in the act of generation, as the woman's part is the receptive womb. Then also the voices calling for the rights of them the others are down upon, of the trivial and flat and foolish and despised. And then in another shift to the unexpected, he becomes the doorway for the voice of fog in the air and beetles rolling balls of dung. Nothing's too low or intangible for him to become the voice of and to transform into something clear and pure. Voices indecent, by me, clarified and transfigured. Well, let's pause for Lou Reed to take us on a walk on the wild side. He lacks the wild, joyful energy of Whitman, but in his fascination for and celebration of the wild side of society, we could see him as following in Whitman's path.
Holly came from Miami, FLA, hitchhiked away across USA, plucked her eyebrows on the way, shaved her legs, and then he was a she. She says, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey honey, take a walk on the wild side. Candy came from out on the island, bedroom, she was everybody's darling. But she never lost her head, even when she was given head. She says, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls go doo 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 doo. Never once gave it away. Everybody had to pay and pay. A hustle here and a hustle there. New York City is the place where they said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey Joe, take a walk on the wild side. Sugar Plum Fairy came and hit the streets, looking for soul food and a place to eat. Went to the Apollo, you should have seen him go, go, go. They said, hey sugar, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. All right. Ha. Jackie is just speeding away. Thought she was James Dean for a day. Then I guess she had to crash. Valium would have helped that patch. I said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey honey, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls say, doot doo 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 doo.
I'm not sure about that song. It certainly is a doorway for the voice of transgressing sexual boundaries. But attend to the way Whitman's voice is so much more alive. High on life, let's say, rather than coming down off a heroin fix. I do not press my finger across my mouth. I keep as delicate around the bowels as around the head and heart. Copulation is no more rank to me than death is. I believe in the flesh and the appetites. Seeing, hearing, and feeling are miracles, and each part and tag of me is a miracle. Divine am I inside and out, and I make holy whatever I touch or am touched from. Why is that? How does Whitman make holy whatever he touches or is touched from? Because he brings wonder and appreciation and joy into his connection with all things. Can we do this too? Well, yes, why not? Though it takes some disciplined work to free us from the judgmental I-it approach to the world we've all grown up with and which blocks us from the divine holiness around us. But lest we think Whitman is getting too flighty with all this holiness stuff, he offers us the assertion, indecent to most 19th century readers, that the scent of these armpits is aroma finer than prayer. Isn't that lovely? Churches burn the finest incense to symbolize the ascent of prayers to heaven, but Whitman knows that the scent of his own armpits, the scent of his wonder-filled body, connects him to heaven more firmly than any prayer, and his own perceptions connect him to heaven more than churches or Bibles or creeds. And out of this comes another catalogue, a litany of parts of his body that he will worship because they are holy. It's worth spending a minute taking in this catalogue. If I worship any particular thing, it shall be some of the spread of my body, he begins, and then addresses various parts of his body. Ready? First, we get the translucent mold of me. What sort of mold? Is this something like his snot, or maybe his spit? Then come the shaded ledges and rests. What are our shaded parts? Our armpits? The folds beneath our knees or between our legs? I don't know. The next item, the firm masculine coulter, is easier to understand. A coulter is a plow shaft, that long, piercing instrument that thrusts into the soft earth. In other words, he's talking about his erection. But what does he mean when he next speaks about whatever goes to the tilth of me? Does he mean whatever plows me? Not my own plow shaft, but perhaps someone else's? Yes, why not? Whitman, almost from the start, was hailed as the door for the long, dumb voice of homosexuality. To be reading Whitman was a crypto signal that you might be gay. Charles Warren Stoddart, one of Whitman's early gay fans, once wrote to Whitman asking him directly whether he had ever had sex with a man, and Whitman answered no. Does that clench the argument? Does it matter? We are not reading biography here, but poetry, and Whitman is taking on the voice of every human being, the good and the bad, the rich and the poor, the white and the black, the straight and the gay, the male and the female. For me, mine, male and female, he'd said earlier in the poem. But in any case, we are not concerned with biography here, but poetic voices. Whitman is a poet who embraces all of human life and takes on all voices. Of course he's going to speak about penetrating others and being penetrated himself. For further discussion of this point, let's turn to one of my favorite authors, Anthony Burgess, author of Clockwork Orange, but also of much else, fiction, nonfiction, poetry. He did everything. He loved literature, and he loved to be outrageous. I used to open The Observer and turn to his book reviews first, and I always found there at least one word I'd never seen before. Listen to what he says about Whitman in this connection. It is a sexuality omnifutuent rather than homoerotic. Whitman was always quick to assert his heterosexuality and boast of his illegitimate offspring. One has no reason to disbelieve him. But the mythical answerer he makes of himself has to be androgynous. Omnifutuent? Well, you know what omni means, all. And futuant? F-U-T-U-A-N-T. It comes from the Latin verb futura, which my nice Latin dictionary defines as to have carnal connection. If you know the French expression foutez-vous, you'll understand. But it doesn't mean that Whitman's persona of the answerer has carnal connections with everyone. It means he can go to both sides. We today use another Latin term, bisexual.
I like pie, I like cake, I like anything you bake. I like your crackers too, crumbled up in chicken stew. When I see your jelly roll, then I lose my self-control. But of all these things, I like you best of all, yeah, yeah. Thank you.
lose my self-control. But of all these things, I like you best of all. Yeah, yeah. I like pie, I like cake, I like anything you bake. I like your crackers too, crumbled up in chicken stew. When I see your jelly roll, then I lose my self-control. But of all these things, I like you best of all.
The Four Clefs, who like pie, who like cake, who like it any way it's prepared. Food as sex, or just food? If not omnifuturant, at least they are omnivorous. I mean, omnivorous. That comes to almost the same thing. But the crux of the song is the Whitman-esque movement to the very essence of the other person. But of all these things, I like you best of all. But back to our catalogue of parts of the body he worships. There is his rich blood and the milky stream, pale strippings of my life, which I think again refers to his semen, obviously a milky semen, a milky stream, but also, according to some ancient beliefs, each ejaculation diminishes the man's lifespan, thus stripping his life. And his breast that presses against other breasts, the divine embrace of another. And then back to further genital imagery, the root of washed sweet flag. We are so ignorant today and have no picture in our minds of any of these natural things. The sweet flag is a plant also known as calamus, named after a minor Greek god who made love to another minor Greek god. Whitman had a section of poems in later editions of Leaves of Grass called Calamus, celebrating what he called the manly love of comrades. The emergence of the long, thin seed part of this sweet flag is certainly phallic, and so is the long, thin bill of the snipe mentioned in the next. And the nest of guarded duplicate eggs is probably not the twin eggs in the womb, but the twin egg shapes guarded in the man's nest. The list continues, but gradually moves beyond Whitman's own body to features of nature that affect him and are depicted as human. Mixed tousled hay of head and beard and brawn, it shall be you that I worship. Winds whose soft tickling genitals rub against me, it shall be you. Hands I have taken, face I have kissed, mortal I have ever touched, it shall be you. And as he's said it before in the poem, and he'll say it again, but what characterizes this Whitman persona is a joyful appreciation of, well, the lusciousness of everything. If he focuses on his love of himself, it's only because that self is a symbol for the whole world. I dote on myself. There is that lot of me, and all so luscious. Each moment, and whatever happens, thrills me with joy. The joy arises because he is aware that his whole being is ultimately a mystery. I cannot tell how my ankles bend, nor whence the cause of my faintest wish, nor the cause of the friendship I emit, nor the cause of the friendship I take again. And then this section ends with a kind of hymn to the mysteries and wonders of daybreak. To behold the daybreak. The little light fades the immense and diaphanous shadows. The air tastes good to my palate. Critics get all excited by the obliquely sexual imagery in this poem, but we have seen the way Whitman expresses his connection to this ultimate creative, life-affirming energy most effectively and outrageously through sexual metaphors. Something I cannot see puts upward libidinous prongs. Seas of bright juice suffuse heaven. And then the climax of this hymn and the section as a whole reshapes the wonder and mystery and joy into a call for profound humility and reverence. Seeing all this glory around you that you have no chance of figuring out, Whitman challenges us. See then whether you shall be master. See then whether you shall be master. This is the same point the book of Job makes when Job, who thought he knew all there was to know about how to live a good life, is confronted by God with the great mysteries of nature. Job has to bow his head in the presence of these cosmic mysteries and acknowledge that he certainly is not master, but one part of a larger whole. So there we are, Chant 24 of Whitman's Song of Myself. I hope it caught you in one or two places. Our task at this evening under lamplight is just to wonder and enjoy, not to master the poem, that great academic heresy, mastering a piece of literature. See then whether you shall be master. No, let's not even try. Well, here's the section once again before we part this evening, but first, a musical break. I thought we could try a show without the Kinks, but it doesn't seem possible. Here's God's Children. In the face of those bureaucrats and industrialists who see no wonder and just use or misuse the world around us, we assert that we are all God's children. The rich man, poor man, the saint and the sinner, the wise man, the simpleton, the loser and the winner, we are all the same to him, stripped of our clothes and all the things we own. Walt Whitman, an American, one of the roughs, a cosmos, disorderly, fleshly, and sensual, eating, drinking, and breeding. No sentimentalist, no stander above men and women or apart from them, no more modest than immodest. Unscrew the locks from the doors. Unscrew the doors themselves from their jams. Whoever degrades another degrades me, and whatever is done or said returns at last to me, and whatever I do or say, I also return. Through me the afflatus surging and surging, through me the current and index. I speak the password primeval, I give the sign of democracy. By God, I will accept nothing which all cannot have their counterpart of on the same terms. Through me many long dumb voices, voices of the interminable generation of slaves, voices of prostitutes and of deformed persons, voices of the diseased and despairing and of thieves and dwarves, voices of cycles of preparation and accretion, and of the threads that connect the stars, and of wombs, and of the father stuff, and of the rights of them the others are down upon, of the trivial and flat and foolish and despised, of fog in the air and beetles rolling balls of dung. Through me forbidden voices, voices of sexes and lusts, voices veiled, and I remove the veil. Voices indecent, by me clarified and transfigured. I do not press my finger across my mouth. I keep as delicate around the bowels as around the head and heart. Copulation is no more rank to me than death is. I believe in the flesh and the appetites. Seeing, hearing, and feeling are miracles, and each part and tag of me is a miracle. Divine am I inside and out, and I make holy whatever I touch or am touched from. The scent of these armpits is aroma finer than prayer. This head is more than churches or Bibles or creeds. If I worship any particular thing, it shall be some of the spread of my body. Translucent mold of me, it shall be you. Shaded ledges and rests, firm masculine culture, it shall be you. Whatever goes to the tilth of me, it shall be you. You, my rich blood, your milky stream, pale strippings of my life. Breast that presses against other breasts, it shall be you. My brain, it shall be your occult convolutions. Root of washed sweet flag, timorous pond snipe, nest of guarded duplicate eggs, it shall be you. Mixed tousled hay of head and beard and brawn, it shall be you. Trickling sap of maple, fiber of manly wheat, it shall be you. Sun, so generous, it shall be you. Vapors lighting and shading my face, it shall be you. You sweaty brooks and dews, it shall be you. Winds, whose soft tickling genitals rub against me, it shall be you. Broad muscular fields, branches of live oak, loving lounger in my winding paths, it shall be you. Hands I have taken, face I have kissed, mortal I have ever touched, it shall be you. I dote on myself. There is that lot of me, and all so luscious. Each moment, and whatever happens, thrills me with joy. I cannot tell how my ankles bend, nor whence the cause of my faintest wish, nor the cause of the friendship I emit, nor the cause of the friendship I take again. To walk up my stoop is unaccountable. I pause to consider if it really be. That I eat and drink is spectacle enough for the great authors and schools. A morning glory at my window satisfies me more than the metaphysics of books. To behold the daybreak, the little light fades the immense and diaphanous shadows. The air tastes good to my palate. Hefts of the moving world at innocent gambols, silently rising, freshly exuding. scooting obliquely high and low. Something I cannot see puts upward libidinous prongs. Seas of bright juice suffuse heaven. The earth by the sky stayed with, the daily close of their junction, the heaved challenge from the east that moment over my head, the mocking taunt, see then whether you shall be master. The mocking taunt, see then whether you shall be master.
Love itself.